Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
You are what you eat, and you are what you eat, eats. And you're even what you eat, eats, eats.
Welcome to the Local Food Connection Show, where we discuss the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. The Local Food Connection Show is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country, and we acknowledge that in Australia, we're growing food on the unceded land of many Indigenous nations, and we pay respects to all those who managed this land for millennia before us. My name's Anne Stanley, and today I'm chatting with Wayne Rankin. I met Wayne when I went to his place to pick up a copy of a lovely book called Out of the Mist, which I saw advertised, I think, in our local paper in Warrandyte. The book's about nothing more than the history of the street that he lives in. It's a celebration of localism, if ever there was one. And Wayne's got a lovely house, which he shares with his wife, Ruth, and it's a hand-built mud brick house, and it's surrounded by gardens growing fruit and vegetables. So I invited Wayne on the show today to chat about himself, his street, his house, and the garden that he and Ruth have created. So welcome, Wayne.
Thank you.
Would you tell us a little bit about the book and what motivated you guys and your street to get together to produce it?
Well, the thing is, we've been here about 45 years, and the street's like a community. We've got WhatsApp groups for fire. We've got WhatsApp groups for just normal, you know, swapping vegetables and fruit, and just for general knowledge. You know, people are asking us all the time, who is a good electrician in, that you know, or yeah, a good plumber. And so it's really, it's a great community, and people, you know, just everybody knows just about everybody, you know, so it's great, you know. And it covers not just our street, but the streets even to the side of our street as well.
Okay, so how many households would you say are in this community?
That's a good question.
Approximately.
Oh, gee whiz. Be 50 or 60, I suppose, all up maybe, yeah.
Right, so it's a bit like a village. It's a small village.
Yeah. Well, no, we called it the Peninsula, you know, so that was our naming of it, so yeah.
And just tell us a little bit about the geography of the place. Why do you call it the Peninsula?
Well, I mean, where we live, the Yarra River goes right around us, and so it's like a, you know, a dead-end street, but the Yarra goes right around, so it's sort of, that's why we call it that.
Yeah. And do you think it's that geography that's given it giving you the conditions in which to make a community? Does it lend itself to that more than another street somewhere else, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's just one of those things we, over the years, like, you know, people come and go, of course, but a lot of the people stayed for a long time. And I think it's just people, when people come into the street, we usually give them a package of information about the groups, and we have a newsletter, and also now the book, and so everybody gets a copy of that. And my wife runs a land care group here, which is 30 years old, and that's the reason for the book. It was the 30th anniversary of land care.
Uh-huh.
And so everybody gets a tray of plants as well. So, yeah.
Wow. So there's an idea for every street in Melbourne. You move in, you get a newsletter, access to the newsletter, you get put on the WhatsApp group, you get a beautiful book, the history of your street, the whole street, then you start swapping your veggies with people. So, you know, what a wonderful model for what every street could be.
Yeah.
Right. So I was
everywhere.
Yeah. So what I loved about the book was it tells about things that in the history of the street, as well as photos of the houses in the street and who lived in them, and et cetera. So can you tell us a little bit about the street, just, you know, how it started, how it became a street?
Well, I mean, going right back to when it was cut up, I mean, there were people that owned quite big properties, in the area. And there's a map in the book which has got the names of some of the people on it. But our street was developed by the Osborne family. And that, actually was a big thing. Like there's Professor Osborne, which is in the book. And so they own quite a lot of the land around here, and even land over near Eltham College as well. So,
And that experimental school in the 40s, the Kunang School,
yeah.
was that in your street or was that just
No,
nearby?
that's
No.
in one of the other streets that goes off Osborne.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, well, let's just tell us about some of the housing. In the book it shows some lovely mid-century housing, and then which obviously was 50s and 60s, but then there was the big mud brick revolution in the 70s.
Yeah.
So maybe tell us about your own house and how you built it yourself.
Okay, well, I mean, if we've been here, I think 45 years, so 76, I suppose, when I built. In actual fact, we had a house in North Ringwood, which was all brick and timber, but it was a bit like a cave, it was light-wise. And when I went to sell it, people would say, "Well, can you turn the lights on?" And I said, "They're already on." But so what I did, I made a cardboard model of the house we wanted to build here. And then I'd come up and put it on the tree stump and visualize it on the block,
Oh,
how it would
wow.
look. Yeah. So that's
Ah.
how it started with the cardboard model. So.
And what's what's your background training or what's your talent that makes you think about things in that way?
I'm a graphic designer, so.
You're a graphic designer, so you think visually and spatially.
And I'm a glass artist as well. I do glass as well. Yeah.
All right. So you made your model, and then what did you do next?
Well, then I needed somebody to draw it up because, I mean, I couldn't do that side of things. So I ended up getting Peter Jarvis, who used to work with Alistair Knox, and he was the draftsman there. And so he drew the plans up for us. And then we subcontracted the house, and we did as much as we could. And I laid a lot of mud brick, and Ruth and me did a lot of staining, and but all the big heavy timbers, we had other people do that work. So it was built in a couple of stages. We built the first stage, and then the second stage happened further on. So, yeah.
Can you just tell the listeners who Alistair Knox is for those who don't know?
Well, he's,
Was.
well, well, Alistair was really behind the mud brick revolution, really, in Eltham, I suppose. He lived there, and so he was an amazing guy that just built just amazing homes. I mean, there's quite a few in Warrandyte still, and all out of mostly recycled materials, except for the mud, of course. Well, that's out of the earth, but
And
yeah.
did your mud bricks come from mud on your own property?
No, because Warrandyte's too rocky.
Yes.
Where we are, so what I did, I bought the mud bricks from, I think, Hurstbridge or St Andrews, up that way.
I see.
And everybody said to me, "You'll have more fun laying them rather than trying to make them, So, and
That'd be a long process.
I can remember laying the things, and the guys who were working with me had built other mud brick houses. And of course, being a graphic designer, I was getting them all nice and level. And they'd come along and nudge them with their elbows and just to add a little bit of interest,
Oh, seriously, just to make it not perfect and
So
stuff.
conformed,
Now, look, it's a beautiful house. We're meeting here on Zoom, and I'm actually looking at Wayne in the house, and what I'm seeing is a brick fireplace with a timber mantelpiece. The mud bricks, are they rendered inside or
Yeah,
just?
they've been rendered. When we first built, I deep braked all the joins between the bricks to make them accentuate the bricks. But
Ah.
after being here for so many, and of course that's a great spot for cobwebs, spiders,
Ah.
and also we just wanted to enliven the house a little bit. So what we did, we rendered them and we've put colour into some of the walls now. So
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
and I see a lovely timber ceiling and timber beams across the ceiling.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you can tell us about what do you love about the house? What's been good about it?
Well, I mean, it's people come in here in summer and say, God, the air conditioning's fantastic. And there's no air conditioning. So, I mean, mud brick will build up in heat over a few days. But what we do is open every door and window at night, and let it air. And then you close it up like today, every window and door is closed, So, and it keeps it cool. And it's just the comfort level of the house, It's, we don't, ever feel really hot or, I mean, we've double glazed. We did that probably 3 or 4 years ago, but that's made a big difference in winter, of course. Yeah.
So, I mean, for anybody out there interested in permaculture, that's a really good example of permaculture design, where you design your built environment to minimize the inputs that you have to put into it in terms of electricity and
I mean, we've got solar on the roof, but we haven't got batteries as yet. That's the next move. Yeah.
Still work, still improving everything. Still.
Well, sort of waiting. I mean, there's so much happening in that area that, there's going to be some big developments, I think, in batteries.
Now that well, let's walk out to, imaginatively to the garden, because I remember when I was there that I saw outside, I don't know which way it's facing, but a part of your garden that's just got a really rich fernery that you've got water just dripping at onto from sprinklers, I presume, and it just gives a that really must cool that part of the house down. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that's on the south side. So really, if you open the doors and that, Nick, can you get the nice cool air through from that.
And was that done
And
intentionally or?
I mean, it's been there a long time. Well, it's been there probably 43 years, I reckon. So yeah. And of course, you get all the wildlife in there too. Sometimes you find a ring-tailed possum curled up in the tree ferns, or you have a snake sliding through.
You got fly screens on your windows that you got open at night? Don't want any snakes sliding into your
Well,
backyard.
the thing is, we've also covered all the gaps under the doors now, because years ago we did have a couple of tiger snakes inside. So,
That's the price you live the pay the price you pay for living in the bush.
But they're out in the garden. I mean, you hear them slither off, but they don't, unless you stand on one or something silly, but if you're working in the garden, you just poke around first and they usually move off anyway.
All right. Take us for a walk around your garden then. What do you got going on in your garden?
Well, for a start, if I start with the veggie patch, that's a tennis court.
Nice
And
and
so,
flat.
yeah. And the thing is, with the tennis court, we used to play a lot of tennis. My daughter was a very good tennis player, but we got to the stage where we weren't using it. And it was going to cost an arm and a leg to fix. I mean, something like $9,000 to resurface it. And so in the end, I started doing no dig. And I was a member of Melbourne Permaculture Group at that stage. And so what I did, I just put straw and paper and built it up like you do with no dig. But then I found still the, cockatoos and possums were getting into stuff. So because it was a tennis court, I already had four walls. So what I did, I put a framework across, not the whole tennis court, but probably almost half. And it's all encased now so that they can't get in. The small birds can get in, which are fine because they eat the insects and stuff. But, and so it keeps all that. The only vermin that get in there, of course, are rats occasionally. That's the only problem. But it's been a. And then what I did, I started the no dig within that area and then really moved to doing wicking beds. And I got on to, because Warrandyte's got a lot of termite, every time we put timber down, we don't put timber anywhere now because it just gets eaten out. So what I used was cypress pine. And so down in Gippsland, there's a guy who recycles all the old trees into sleepers. And so I used those as the basis for the wicking bed. And some of them, there's two of them in particular, 4.8 meters by 1.2, and it's quite big. And I've got a smaller one as well, and a shorter one for strawberries. So at the moment, I've got tomatoes growing out there, cucumbers, zucchinis, beans, strawberries, capsicums. There's quite a lot of stuff happening out there at the moment. Yeah.
Radio MMT.
The Facts About Economics.
Radio MMT.
With Anne and Kev, bringing you fair and balanced reporting.
They are bastards, utter and complete bastards, Anne.
That's right. We're really digging into this bastardry.
It's a smokescreen for corporations to increase their profit margin.
All these big lies.
Corporate profit and greed.
They're considering it in their evil plans.
He's the archetype megalomaniac neoliberal.
The government pretending to be there for the people.
The neoliberal ethos of squeezing workers.
This power struggle is continuously playing out under our very noses.
So it's simplistic and it's inaccurate.
What kind of an economic recovery strategy is that?
Do you reckon
that?
It's more effective to say it's spurious, to say the least, or it's bullshit?
Radio MMT.
The second and fourth Friday of each month.
Between 5:30 and 6:30 p.m.
Here on 3CR Community Radio.
Wildlife Victoria is a non-profit emergency response service committed to assisting wildlife in need across Victoria. Our trained and dedicated volunteers rescue and rehabilitate sick, injured and orphaned animals so they can be released back to their native habitat. If you see wildlife that may need our help, please contact us on 8400 7300. To donate or register to become a volunteer, hop onto our website at wildlifevictoria.org.au.
A 3CR supporter.
You're never alone on the loam, and it's time to get to work. We've been looking up, we've been messing around, we've been freaking out.
This is the Local Food Connection Show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can also visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. And you can see all of our podcasts there too, and listen to those at your leisure. My name's Anne Stanley, and today I'm chatting with Wayne Rankin, Warrandyte resident, home builder, biodynamic gardener, food grower.
With the dirt, you'll observe it's certainly not inert.
What do you use for soil? Are you adding soil to it constantly?
Yeah, well, what I do is I make my own biodynamic compost heap. Excuse me, I just have a bit of water. Yeah, so I saw years ago about Rudolf Steiner and biodynamics, you know, putting microbes into the soil and keeping humus in the soil. So I saw the Steiner School had a course on doing biodynamic heap, so I did the course, and of course I've been doing it every year since. And it's an amazing process, because you start with just bales of straw, and you sort of build a tent up the middle with, you know, when you break up a straw bale, it breaks into biscuits.
Yes, yeah, yep, yep.
So what you do is you pile the biscuits up like a pyramid right through the middle. So that allows air to run through the centre of the heap.
Okay.
And then you lay the biscuits flat on the ground around that, and you add things like anything from the garden wastes to green material. Well, you start with green material first. And what I do is I grow a lot of Warrigal greens. They grow everywhere under my fruit trees. And so I end up using those in the heap as green material, because it breaks down really well. And then what you do is you've got to use cow manure. That's part of the biodynamic culture. You don't use any other manure except for cow manure.
So you can't use chook manure or?
No. Well, they don't. That's part of their process.
Yep.
And what you do is you, like what they do normally, they stir it all up and get it like mud, you know, and pour it in.
They make but a vortex, don't they? They've got that idea, yeah.
So what I do, though, is I just buy the bags, because it's so hard to try and go out and get cow manure from places, you know. So I just get them from Bunnings, basically, and I put it on and really soak it. And then what you do is you put dry material on top, and then more green material, and then more straw, and you keep building it up like biscuits, just like no dig, basically.
So, but basically what you've got then is this air thing underneath, and that seems to be the important. So go on.
Well, that's to allow air to get in underneath the heap.
Yeah, and
so it aerates, you know, yes, that.
Yeah.
And what I do is I also put a plastic pipe with slots in underneath, because that eventually collapses, you know.
Oh, and you should put that in to make it, to keep it, the integrity of it.
Yeah. And then what happens, you keep building the sides up, and then eventually you start to cover the V as well. So right. the heap that I do, it's about 4 metres by 2 metres, and it gets up to 1.5 to 2 metres high.
And does it get hot? Do you get a hot compost thing
going
on?
Well, you don't. It probably does get hot, but you don't really know. It's all happening inside.
Right.
Because what you do in the end, you cover it all again with straw. And I'll just show you a picture in a minute, but you spray in the heap. You've got to put things like, I get from Biodynamics Australia, I'm a member in Bellingen in New South Wales. And they send down the concoctions to me, because I can't. Just to give you an idea, in the heap goes dandelion, chamomile, yarrow, nettle, and oak bark, right? And they have to be put in specific spots in the heap, and they send you the instructions for that anyway.
Ah.
And then when you finish the heap, you cover it again with straw and you spray it with valerian, which sort of molds over the top and really seals it off, you know.
Wow.
So then you don't do anything with the compost heap. You just leave it.
And at what point do you start planting in it?
No, well, you don't. What happens, you know, when I said it's 1.5 high, it eventually comes down to probably almost a metre in height. I only just finished using one heap in early January that I did the December before that.
So you basically get a bunch of really good soil out of that, and then you just pop that straight into your wicking beds, or
You don't, with the biodynamic compost, you don't necessarily just use a whole wheelbarrow load. I mean, one shovelful can do almost a square meter.
So you're inoculating the soil with it, the existing soil. That sounds really interesting.
I'm just about to do a new one at the moment.
I think people will be interested to hear that, because I've been wanting to get someone to explain biodynamics. So
can I just show you this illustration, maybe?
You'll have to talk about it as you show it to me, because it's a radio audience. So I can describe it. So we've got a picture of this little house shaped. It looks like a little thatched roof. And it's the compost. It's an illustration that must come with the compost kit that Wayne gets from Biodynamics Australia. And it's got a preparation in it that's made from dandelion, yarrow, nettle, oak bark, and valerian, and chamomile. And is that called 500, or is that the one that comes out
no.
of the
No, that's not 500.
So this is another one of their preparations, and they give you the instructions about how to add that to this little thatch of cow manure and straw or hay.
So what you do is you push, I don't know where you, there's specific spots in the top.
Yes.
That you actually have to put them in the right order and where they go.
Sure.
And then they all actually, what you do, you get the material, like when the dandelion chamomile comes, they're in little balls of like it's probably got cow manure and everything, and you actually put those into the hole and then cover them with a little bit of soil.
I think that's interesting. Now, Wayne, we've only got another 2 minutes.
Okay.
So is there anything you want to say that you think is important to let people know food growing?
Well, one thing with the biodynamics, just quickly, you can get, if people go to biodynamics.net.au, they can actually get the soil activators and things as well, because that's another process. You mentioned 500, but I used to do that years ago. But now they have a soil activator, which you just go out and put out at certain times of the day, which is a lot easier than doing all the vortexes for an hour.
So someone else has done that.
Oh, you're still going to do vortexes, but not as long.
Yeah, yeah.
But I suppose one thing, I was just going to read you some. One thing that struck me years ago, David Suzuki, you know, something that he said was one nature. We are nature, all people and all species. We are interconnected with nature and with each other. What we do to the planet and its living creatures, we do to ourselves. How true is that?
That is, you're going to send me that quote and I'm going to put that in the show notes.
Okay.
After the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on our show, Wayne.
No, that's okay.
And I'm glad I ran into you. And I just think it's wonderful that a street has made a book about itself. So that's great. And I also think it's wonderful that in North Warrandyte we've got some that you've managed to grow as much food as you're growing. And you've also got an orchard there too, and we haven't had time to go into that. So anyone that knows out here in Warrandyte, there is very little soil. It's rocky soil. And it's not fertile for growing, you know, Western food. But Wayne has shown, but by using biodynamics and just by building up that soil over years, it's perfect what he's managed to create good food growing conditions. So, okay. So this is the Local Food Connection Show on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show, and you can access all of our podcasts there too. Today, my guest was Wayne Rankin, Warrandyte resident, home builder, biodynamic gardener, food grower, and much more, but we've only got half an hour, so we haven't gone into as much as we probably could go into. If you're interested in biodynamics, go to biodynamics.net.au, and you can find out more about that. And as always, go to localfoodconnect.org.au to find events you can attend in the coming weeks. Remember, if you want to support independent media, please subscribe to 3CR. And just before I go, I just think that what Wayne has described about his street is a really good example of people loving the land they're on, sharing their surplus and taking care of each other. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more radical radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
We've been looking up, we've been messing around, we've been freaking out, but it's time to get down, 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 'cause we're made up of common ground, can't live without it, and it's time to get down, 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 down.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.